Hello and welcome to this edition of the Four Wide Salute podcast. I am TJ Lane along with my good friend Brandon Segal. And on this episode of the Four Wide Salute, we're going to talk about the state of dirt track racing on a national level and on a weekly level. And Brandon, I think as you look at the two between national and weekly, both kind of paint a very different story right now.
This is very true. And for a lot of the folks that seem to be new to the sport, they're seeing a lot of the glitz and glamour of these big events are growing and are getting more attention. But then when you go to the weekly program, you're hurting for fans and you're hurting for cars.
And it's something that it's always kind of been an issue in the sport from my time starting out as a promoter. You know, it seems like that you could always usually get a pretty good crowd for the special events, but it was a weekly show. That's always in my time with it. That's always been what the issue was getting the crowds for the weekly shows. But to offset that, there was always enough cars in this area that you could always count on a pretty good car count, and that back gate that you would bring through would get you through the low crowds. But as we've seen now, the car counts have just dropped, and now the track promoters today for weekly shows, they're facing not just an issue trying to get crowds, but trying to get the cars as well.
Yeah, in the Ohio Valley area, 10 years ago, you would go to a place like Portsmouth Raceway Park and expect enough late models to have a B main. They would be in the 30s or sometimes even the low 40s for a weekly show. And then the modifieds, you could have up to 60 cars. And it made for some long nights, but it makes for some really entertaining racing and a lot of different guys to pull for through the night.
Yeah, and you know, I think as we look at it as what's changed, why have the car counts gone down? And I think it's a pretty pretty easy answer to it. It's just the cost sport has just gotten so high that it's the we've seen the effect on it with some of the national teams, but at the weekly level, the cost is just it is just really, really affecting it right now.
It's that old tagline: it's the economy, stupid. You know, the cost of cars have skyrocketed, while at the same time, you know, in the outside of motorsports, you know, the economy's taken a hit. And who are the weekly warriors? Which usually the business people, you know, they have a car and they sponsor themselves, or they'll be good friends with somebody that has a business and they sponsor a car. And those people can't afford to put the money into the sport while at the same time the costs are increasing.
That's one thing that we've seen is used to kind of the guys that would sold out would be more kind of your blue collar racers that just couldn't hang on no more. But now the cost has gotten so high that we're seeing guys that have big budgets, you know, guys that have the money to race, that the cost has just gotten so high that for them now they can't even justify it.
And that's the thing is, you know, maybe it's not that they can't afford to do it, but it's just no longer justifiable to their bottom line. And you're seeing a lot of those, you know, well-funded, otherwise teams and drivers disappear.
So, yeah, you know, when I first got in the sport 15 years ago, the thing that you heard cost-wise was always about the motors. That was the thing that was eating everybody up, was spending, you know, the $30,000 on the big motors. But back in those days, If you had a smaller engine, you could overcome that. If you were a good driver and you knew how to set the car up, because as the night goes on with the dirt track, it always has the track always has less moisture in it as you go on through the night, and by the time the feature rolls around, probably 80% of the time the track's dry slick and you don't need that motor. So you know, guys could overcome that, but here in the past 5 years or so, it's become the technology and the chassis and the technology and the shocks that, you know, nowadays you've got to have a $60,000 chassis plus a $40,000 motor to be able to be competitive. And that's just not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, that's just out of touch to be able to get very many people to come in at a level where you're paying a good purse is $2,000 to win. And then it drops off fairly significantly. If you got $150,000 in a race car and some of your setup, which a lot of guys have a lot more than that, I mean, it's hard to justify doing that, even if you have the money. And also what you said is you could expect the track to slow down and slick off. And if you knew how to set a car up and you were a good driver, you could come to the front, and a lot of the times, you know, not that long ago, there were a lot of inverts or pill draws, so you had a chance of starting up front in a heat race and transferring to the main. And now a lot of those inverts have went away.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you don't have a lot of inverts. You don't have a lot of pill draw type formats in it, and it does make it to where it's crucial that you get that good qualifying lap to start up front, because as the bodies have changed on the cars, these cars have gotten you know a lot more with the aerodynamics, and that it makes a difference. It's tougher to pass, and yeah, it's just. I think guys realize that, hey, you know, I've got $50,000 in this race car, and I'm running mid pack. I have no shot of winning. And after a while, that would get frustrating, and that's what happens. Guys get frustrated and sell out, and that's when you start to see the car counts drop.
And looking at that, with the aero, yeah, we used to talk about the sprint car racing in the area, namely KC or Atomic. It is now. You know, the heat races would not necessarily be that great. They get strung out because they're dependent on the air, and you wouldn't have enough time to really get into traffic to shake things up. Now, you look at a late model race, and it looks a lot the same. You're usually getting – sometimes there's more than one groove, but usually there's one fast groove. They lock around it, and they are riding just as fast as they can go with the aero pushing them down, and they can't race with each other very well in a heat race.
It's the same thing like we talked about with NASCAR with all the downforce. There is that they've got these late models. They are so stuck to the ground now that they've got so much downforce on them that yeah, you know, that dirty air, it makes a difference. You almost have to have lap traffic come into play to get that leader in the dirty air, so you know, so other guys can move around and try to pass. And it's something that's definitely changed. I think I saw, I think it was Zach Doom, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, he had put a post on Facebook about that, just talking about with the aero, just how much that comes to play. And it's definitely something that's affecting the quality of racing for sure.
So when you talk about that in the aero, that's changed how these guys are setting the cars up, because now you got all these big teams are trying to coil bind the right fronts. And during hot laps, before they even take the green flag, you'll notice the guys are tearing up the track with the right fronts because they're trying to get the skirts and everything else as close to the ground as they can when they travel the cars. And it's really set up a platform that's unstable. If the track has any kind of ripples, bumps, it doesn't really have to be rough the way it did 10 years ago. And these cars will start to bounce, hop, and skip and really do some nasty things sometimes.
I've seen tracks that have been perfectly smooth, and just because it has so much moisture in it, you're seeing cars getting upside down, you're seeing cars break left and right, and that's where that brings up another issue, because, you know, fans always talk about, hey, it seems like the tracks are a lot more dry slick these days, and that's the reason why it's kind of put the promoters in a box to where, you know, they're not going to see all their cars that come to put the show on get tore up. So, you know, you tend to try to make it more dry slick just because it seems like the cars are so fragile these days on the tacky tracks.
And that's a mindset that's, you know, some fans believe that a hammer down tacky track puts on the best racing. I used to be that way, because a few years ago, and if you look at videos, that there was some hard and good racing, but the way the cars are today, it doesn't put on that good of racing. You're liable to see some dangerous looking wrecks, cars breaking, and honestly, because of all the aero dependence, when they're wide open, it's not that great of racing. You've got to limit the traction through laying the track slick off. However, what's really hard for these track operators is if you go too far, then you're going to have the track starting to lock down and you're down to one groove and burning up tires.
It's a really fine line with the track prep to have a track that has too much moisture in it and that might get rough or be hard on equipment, to, as opposed to having one that's too dry to you know, to where it gets dusty and to where, you know, you don't have the multi-line racing. It's a really, really tough thing. That's probably a topic for a whole nother podcast while all goes into the track prep. But Yeah, I mean, I think it's just is definitely a very, very challenging time right now for these track operators.
How many tracks in the area even try to run a weekly show anymore? There's really only two tracks that I know of that are running steady during the summer months is Atomic Speedway and Portsmouth, and then more in my area, Florence runs regular up until the North-South 100, and then they take a month and a half off and then finish the year with a couple races in October.
Here's what the issue is for the tracks when it comes to these weekly shows is you have the same amount of work that goes into it as you do a special event. You have to spend the same amount of time working the track every week, and that's something that's not cheap because to work the track, you've got to keep graders, water trucks, tractors, you've got to keep all that running. And when you're running that constantly, that diesel fuel gets pretty pricey. And so, you know, you've got that. You've got the same cost for your insurance, which is not cheap. You've got to pay your staff. You've got the same cost to keep the lights on for the water bill. It's just there is so much cost that goes into these weekly shows. I mean, for us at Southern, for a weekly show, I mean, it would cost $15,000 just to run a weekly show.
That is some insane cost. And then you're also working your butt, you know, trying to get guys to come and race with you on a Friday or Saturday night. And used to, like I believe I said earlier, a place like Portsmouth would get 30 some late models. And now any track is happy if they get 15 to 20.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's excellent car count these days. 15 to 20. That's about as good as you're going to get. And it's just because there's just not the cars around, and the cars that are here, they don't, the where it costs so much, the drivers, they're very selective about the number of races that they can run. It seems like, you know, 15 years ago, if you were a racetrack and you had a good paying race, well, heck, you didn't have to sit there and worry about the car count because guys are going to be there. But nowadays, it's just not that simple because guys are just so selective with the number of races that they choose, and it's for no other reason other than they're just trying to meet their budgets.
And that brings up an interesting thought for me is if you look at late models versus sprint cars, we've talked about this before in our conversations that 10, 15 years ago, that the sprint car class in Southern Ohio, you had two or three, maybe five really fast guys on a good weekly or regional type night. And then the rest of the field was just kind of there. And through the time of progression and how things cycle, the sprint car classes are really pretty strong, while the late models have went the absolute other way. As you used to have these really stout fields, and now you have much smaller fields, almost in half, and the quality of the field is really dispersed because now you have probably three or four fast guys that show up, and then the rest of the field is kind of just there running their own race.
So yeah, I think what the big difference is between the sprint cars and the late models is that NASCAR technology has really came into the dirt late model scene. You know, I know that the sprint car teams have NASCAR owners and all that, but that there's only so much you can do with the sprint car components. But with these with these late models, it was back in 2008. I was down at Speed Weeks, Volusia Speedway Park. I was sitting beside one of our local late model racers from up here. He didn't bring his car down. He was just going to watch. And that was right about the time that we started to see some of the NASCAR influence make its way into the late models. And I'll never forget what he told me that night. He said, TJ, if this NASCAR technology and this NASCAR money starts getting into these dirt late models, he said, guys like me are done. And it's been 11 years now since I heard him say that, and I don't think there's been much of a truer statement that's ended up coming true.
What's interesting on that though, and you mentioned it's there's definitely, I mean, I don't think you can argue that there's more of the NASCAR money and attention going into the sprint car side. But they have done a good job of holding their rules and being able to take the cars, because they're fairly simple cars to start with, and they've not let them evolve, you know, as the monies came in. And you're right, they've stayed pretty static. Then you look at the late models, and those have really evolved over the past 10 or so years. And, you know, just even, you know, 2008, so 11 years. If you watch a race on YouTube or online from then, and then you look at them now, the aero has really changed. You look all the different lines and how the cars swoop. And then you look at how high that they've been able to travel the rear ends under acceleration to get that blade up in the air. And the rear steer is just the greatest it's ever been. There's been a lot of little things that they've been allowed to work on and tweak on and add shock technology, and made a huge difference in what the cars are today versus 10, 11 years ago. But the other thing that's interesting, TJ, is you talk about NASCAR money. I'm sure there's been plenty of NASCAR engineers to dabble, but who's putting the money into the sport today from NASCAR? The only team I can think of, and maybe you can correct me, is Clint Bowyer's team. And Clint's team isn't dominant by any stretch of the imagination. They have they won one championship with Don O'Neill and kind of fell off the edge of the earth for a bit.
Right. And you know, and I think that's something, it's maybe not so much that the NASCAR money has got into it. That's maybe something that hasn't really happened. But it's been the technology, kind of, with kind of the same setup types and with the engineering focus, and you know, they're taking cars to wind tunnels. I think that's maybe where we've seen it come into play more.
So you've got two really well-known guys in auto racing, and some more to the general public, and then one definitely to the dirt racing public, and that's Roger Slack, who said in an interview 2 years ago that these dirt late models are the American equivalent of a Formula One car. They are that intricate and that complicated and that type of machinery. And then you've got Kyle Larson, who said in an interview last year that the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series is like NASCAR Cup racing on dirt. They're in the wind tunnel. They're on pull-down rigs, and they're doing dyno work on the engines.
Wow. And that's where it's an issue, too, with attracting local teams to try to build these weekly car counts is – you know, and I've seen it before. You could be a guy that is willing to spend, you know, $7,500,000, which is a crap ton of money to spend on racing, and go in there and have really good equipment. But you know what? These things are so complicated to set up that you can buy a pretty good piece, but if you don't know how to set it up, you're out in left field. And I had more than one person tell me this year going through the pits that setting these things up these days, you almost have to be a rocket scientist.
Well, yeah, and that's a lot of the point, is even if you have the money to spend, you have to hire somebody with a lot of knowledge about these cars. Somebody like Jackie Boggs in the Southern Ohio area. He comes in and helps guys set up their cars. And it's taken the mechanic who's really good, you know, putting a car together and drive, but it's just gotten so past that because you're having to quote unquote science out the travels so that you can get that car sealed off and so that you're not flipping your lid in hot laps.
Yeah, these days of going around and, you know, seeing your local garage with the dirt late model or a dirt modified sitting in there, those are days that are long gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't know how we ever go back. I mean, the only way that I know that you could try to turn back the hand of time is go the way of the wedge car, and you almost have to just completely wipe out what we're doing now. But then that is such an enormous upfront cost at this point that I don't know that that's doable.
Yeah, that would be a pretty, you know, pretty costly change to do. And as we tie things to go back to talking about with the state of weekly dirt late model racing versus the national dirt late model scene, is This is a problem that's it's going to have to be fixed by the national tours and the national sanctioning bodies, because if one local track makes a significant rules change, all that does is put them on an island out there, and that's just not going to make a difference. It's going to take these series to try to get together and make some true change.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there. You don't have one major series. You've got Dirt Car and Lucas Oil. And if they don't make changes together and they're not willing to work together on major changes, and then nothing's going to get done, because somebody's going to be left out on the island, and then these tracks have to choose what kind of car they're running. And then even with that, they've got to balance, okay, what kind of cost are we incurring?
We have seen with the National Dirt Late Model tours, with the National Dirt Late Model scene, they have done so well for so long now, it seems like, with the crowds. I mean, that's for the World of Outlaws and Lucas both. I mean, they are drawing massive crowds. They're getting massive media exposure. It seems like that things are going so good that maybe it's not being looked at as much. What's going to happen in the future? Because there's no doubt that at this sports core, at its base, the weekly level, we are losing major traction. And I think the question becomes, at what point does this really start to affect things at the national level? And has it already started?
And you know what? I think some of that effect is actually the opposite of what you would think. I mean, it's obvious that car counts are down for the big races. However, the quality of field for your Lucas Oil, your World of Outlaws, and for your big national races are maybe as good as they have ever been. And I feel like there's this false bubble that we might be riding on with some of these events, because a lot of these really good regional drivers that used to have places to race, well, hell, they might as well go run a national tour for a year or two.
Yeah, because that's about the only way that they're going to be able to run for, you know, money that's kind of worth what they have in the car. And just one thing that you're seeing, though, is we've seen over the past two or three years there's a lot of national level teams that are now unfortunately, you know, closing their gates, or excuse me, closing their doors. And that's something that we hadn't seen for a while, but it seems like kind of each year where that's becoming a problem.
Yeah, and it's something that we've seen for a few years now. You know, a team and a driver will jump on the World of Outlaws or the Lucas Oil Tour, and if they're not successful, it's almost like it just fatigues everyone. It fatigues the owner. It wears the chicken. And if they come off that tour, a lot of the times the team disappears. And now with Mike Marler, you know, they won the championship, but they, you know, that team essentially went away.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing you saw in NASCAR, you know, with the whole Martin Truex thing. He wins a championship one year, and at the end of the next year, they shut down. So, as well as Dirt Late Model Racing is doing with the crowds, and as poorly as NASCAR is doing, where they're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum as far as drawing crowds, I think that NASCAR and dirt track racing are fighting the same battle, and that's with cost.
At the end of the day, they are covered with the same brush of having to figure out how to combat these rising costs. You know, the cost of racing everywhere is out of control. It just, you know, how bad is it now for each, you know, sport or division? Like, the sprint cars seem to be doing fairly well, but there's still not huge numbers of sprint cars. You know, I'm in USAC territory, and the numbers of, you know, sprint cars running a weekly deal, or even USAC, you know, they used to be 50 cars, and now we're down to 30 cars for big races, and weekly shows are back in the teens. So it's all the way across the spectrum.
Well, you know, I think one thing that's kind of frustrating is, you know, we're into another season now, and it just seems like there's no changes that's been made, and not really any talks going on of hey, what are we going to do to try to fix some of these issues with the cost of the sport.
And that's something I agree with, is it's not something that we hear out loud. Is it happening behind closed doors? Who knows? But, you know, this is one of the aggravating issues that I don't have any great ideas either on. Hey, if we did this, we'd really start saving people money.
Yeah, because it's the way it goes in racing, that when the sanctioning bodies focus on one thing to try to drop the cost on, it seems like the teams find another area to focus on and put all the money in. So it's a moving target, and it's definitely something that's not an easy fix. If it was an easy fix, it would have been fixed years ago. Because I think that the Lucas Oil Series and the World of Outlaw Series, I think they are led by great people. I think they've got the best minds in the sport leading them, and so and you know that they know that there's this issue with the cost. It's just I think you're probably right. Even though it may be frustrating that there may not be a lot of changes made, but where do we really start?
Yeah, and the teams are their own worst enemy, especially, you know, these national teams that do have a little bit of a budget. You know, they're out testing and doing the pull down stuff that we was talking about. They don't necessarily have to do that, but we look at the Rumley team in 2015. They found something that wasn't necessarily expensive to do, but they figured out something that no one else figured out. And I think that just put the emphasis on, if we find something, not only will we be better, we can be dominant. And I think that's triggered, you know, the more testing and the more pull down rigs, and you know, it's made everybody chase that harder than even before, because they know if they find a little something, it could turn into, you know, a big advantage. And it didn't even start out with something that was all that expensive.
Yeah, you know, one of the first things that we've seen, and this was back probably 6 to 10 years ago, that when the series put the tire rules in place, and that was a great thing that they put in place to try to make the competition level even as far as the tire game goes. But what was the first thing that happened after they put these tire rules in place? Well, you saw the team start using the tire softeners, which, you know, using that wasn't just expensive, it was also dangerous to health. And that just created a whole nother, big issue there. So, one thing I will say is I don't envy the ones in charge of our sport at all, because it's a really, really, you know, challenging issues that they have with this.
I absolutely agree. I mean, there's no clear answer or even direction to go to. And I know that a lot of people look at aero rules, and maybe that's the first place we could look, is getting some of the aero, you know, under control. And I genuinely agree, but there's only so much that'll do. And I'd really love to be able to talk with somebody in a more direct position on where they think that this should go.
Yeah, that would be something that would be really cool. And you know, it may have been something that's happened behind closed doors, is just to kind of have a summit of everybody, you know, have the sanctioning bodies in there, have drivers in there, have chassis builders, you know, have the motor builders, just have, you know, everybody that kind of has a stake in the sport, have them all in there and get the, you know, get the different ideas.
You and I both know, and I think we're even a testament to it, that when you get racing people together, there is no shortage of ideas.
That's for sure. And there's one thing that's no doubt, and that is that this sport is full of, some of the brightest minds in the country, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're going into, you know, some of this, we're not trying to be doom and gloom on, you know, dirt track racing, as it's seeming to really pick up some steam, in a more national scale. But it's important to know what the issues are and not be kind of led astray to thinking, you know, it's all great and on the way up, when there's some underlying issues that will absolutely hurt us if they're left unattended to for too long.
That's exactly right. There's so much good stuff that's going on in this sport right now. I feel like with the national series, with the weekly tracks, with all the media outlets, I feel like there's so much promotion that's going on in this sport right now. I feel like the level of exposure in this sport, it's to a level that we've never seen before. And it's great. There's so many people that are working hard and doing great things in this sport. It's just that with the cost, that's the only thing that I see that could kind of slow this ship down is that. And it's just something that, you know, hopefully as we go on, they can get some ideas and try to get these costs back in control.
And that's absolutely right. And, you know, if you're listening, wondering, all right, is there anything I can do? You know, the best thing that any of us can do as a general fan is go out and support the local dirt track, support one of their weekly shows, support one of their regional shows. Don't only show up when there's a national event, though. You should do that too. Go out and enjoy the product that everyone is working so hard to put on for you. There's great races every week all across the country, and just don't be afraid of, you know, low car counts, because I've seen dirt races where they had three late models and they came across the start finish line three wide and one got turned Terry Labonte style up toward the outside wall at the checkered flag. You don't have to have a huge field to have good racing.
That is exactly right. That's one thing I think maybe sometimes we focus a little bit too much on as fans is what the car count is, but I some of the best races I've ever seen have been on nights when the car counts have been down. And I mean, I go every week, and you know, to me, as far as the exciting racing that you see, it's still just as exciting here in 2019 as it was 10 or 15 years ago.
That's the beauty about going to the dirt track, is you never know what you're going to see both on and off the track. So go be part of it. Enjoy the pay-per-view and the live streaming, but find you a track to go to. You won't regret it. For this edition of the Four Wide Salute, he's TJ Lane. I'm Brandon Stigall. Consume us wherever you consume your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @4Wide_Salute and find us on Facebook. Until next time, guys. See ya.